This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This is a late time to have a shiur. I was amazed that there were people here at lunchtime, when in most yeshivas people are taking it easy. And I'm amazed that there are people here at 9:30 at night, willing to learn and discuss new ideas. In this series, are some of you planning to be here for all three of them? If it's good, I don't expect you to come. If it's not good, then you don't come, obviously. But if it's good, are some of you expecting to come for? So you will guide me. We can be quite open as to where we go with it. There are all sorts of, I could keep you going for about 6 months on the topic, so I don't mind where we go. So you'll guide me at the end of the show. You'll tell me the particular areas you want to explore, and that's the direction we'll go. What we're going to do is we're going to get to know a little bit more about the Yetzer Hara. We're going to understand the Yetzer Hara a little bit better. Now, the Yetzer Hara is a quite important individual because he is at least half of what we are. If you figure that we have a Yetzer Tov and we have a Yetzer Hara, and you figure that about 50-50, then at least half of us is Yetzer Hara. So we miss a whole lot of understanding of ourselves if we don't have some understanding of what our Yetzer Hara is. And what's important in our discussion all the way through and in dealing with the Yetzer Hara is the understanding that, very much as is the case with the word for midos, it's interesting, the Torah introduced the idea of good and evil into the world. The Torah introduced the idea of virtue and vice into the world. And yet there's no word in the Torah for virtue, and there's no word in the Torah for vice. Can you think of one? Can you think of a Hebrew word for virtue or a Hebrew word for vice? Tov is good and evil. So objective good and evil that we have. Tov is out there. But good in a person and bad in a person. What have we got? What are the words that would be used? Midot tovo and midot ro, good midos and bad midos. Have you heard of that? Good midos and bad midos. That's all we've got. What does the word midot mean? Measurement. So virtue and vice means a good measure or a bad measure. The issue is how much of it. There's no such thing as a virtue and a vice. Depends how much. So if I were to say to you, is cruelty a virtue or a vice? What is it? Various cruelty, a vice. Is generosity a virtue or a vice? So that's all the true in all other religions. But the right answer for us would be cruelty, virtue or vice, depends how much. Depends when. Depends who. Depends what circumstances. There are times when one needs to be a little cruel. Can you think of times when you need to be cruel? When, for example, you're running ahead. A war situation, good. What about a normal situation? Okay, we can discuss that, yeah. I'm looking for a different answer. So what you're saying is right, all of you, but I'm looking for a different answer, yeah? Children? Be cruel to be kind. You're not giving the right one yet. The right one. Parenting? It's all true, but they're not the one I'm looking for. Bismillah? Sorry? Punishing crimes? Justice? It's a mystery. All right, but you've missed the most important one. Yes! Now, that nobody mentioned that! Yourself! Don't be too kind to yourself. Kind to everybody else. Chesed for everybody else. When it comes to you, when you're on that treadmill and you're sweating, and the question is, do you stay for another 5 minutes? Chesed says, no, take it easy. And Achzariah says, you can push it still, you push it. And the same as it is with physical exercise, so it is with spiritual exercise, so it is with midos, so it is with learning. You've got to be cruel on yourself. Kind to other people. So if you say cruelty is a virtue or a vice, depends who, when, what. We don't have such a thing, virtue, vice. Only the Christians have that. With us, midot means a good measure, midot ro. If the measure is right, it's good. If the measure is wrong, it's bad. That's how it works with midos. And it works the same with Yetzer Hara. What's the opposite of a Yetzer Hara? Yetzer Tov. So what about the word Yetzer? Is Yetzer a good thing or a bad thing? depends. It depends. Yetzer can be Ra, Yetzer can be Tov. But what's important is, it's the same Yetzer. Don't think there's a part of you which is Yetzer Hara, and there's another part which is a Yetzer Tov, and they fight with each other. No, there's only one part. It's the Yetzer. And there we again differentiate ourselves from all other religions. And every other religion is bad and is evil, even within the human being himself. With us there isn't. One Yetzer. One Yetzer. And that's why we say to Chubrichu V'Oraisa the Yisrael Chadu, the Zohar says. God, the Torah, and a Jewish person, one. There's oneness in each of those three, and the three are one. No duplicity, no separation. We're one being, we're integrated. We're complete, we're whole. We're not schizophrenic. What's Yetzer? What does the word Yetzer mean? Where does it come from? What does the word Yetzer mean? More accurately than that, you're on the right track. Fashioning, creative force. The creative force in man. That's what Yetzer is. When the creative force in man is properly directed, it's Yetzer Tov. When the creative force in man is not properly directed, it's Yetzer Ra. So in this whole discussion of Yetzer, we're going to be discussing the creative force in the human being and how to manage that creative force and what happens when it's badly managed and how you manage it well and what role the Torah plays in that and what do you do when it's out of hand, because that's what the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Ra is all about. They're not devils, not bad little things in us that keep on telling us to do bad things. It's one force, a desire of the human being to be creative. That's what it's all about. Now, by way of introduction, I'm going to learn something with you that from this past parasha. You mind retrogressing? Well, maybe we're not retrogressing. Maybe we're just a year ahead of time. Are you picking me up there? A little phrase that in all the drama of last week's parasha, remember what goes on in last week's parasha. Firstly, there's the paraduma in the beginning, the red heifer. And then there's the water, and the arguing with Moshe, and the hitting the rock, and the death of Miriam, and Aaron, and it's such a dramatic parasha. One little thing that we hardly notice. Vayirev ha'om im Moshe, the people argued, they fought with Moshe, and they said, why did you bring us out of Mitzrayim? Remember that last week? Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? To kill us, to this terrible desert, Lomus Shom, to die there, Anachnu, we, Uva Irenu, and our cattle. Why are they worried about their cattle? We're going to die there. The Yalkut Shimoni says the following, as I'll say, Ashrehem Hatzadikim. Fortunate are the Tzadikim. They're lucky, they're happy. Happy Tzadikim. Shechavivo aleihem behemtem kegufon, that they love their animals as much as themselves. Does that sound like the Torah talking? Or does that sound like an alternative lifestyle magazine published in Los Angeles? Happy are the Tzadikim who love their pets as they love themselves. What is that about? Where does Chazal say such a thing? Imagine if the environmentalists got hold of that Chazal, what they would do with it. V'chein matzinu b'Yaakov, and we found the same with Yaakov, who said, Leich nor ra'ei eshloim ochicho v'eshloim hatzlein. And Yaakov sent Yosef. Remember, the brothers were off taking care of the flock. Yosef was at home. And the beginning of the whole tragedy was when Yaakov said to his son Yosef, go and check to see how the brothers are doing and how the sheep are doing. How does he want to know how the sheep are doing? L'kayim ma'ashenema, says Chazal, that fulfills a posuk in Mishlei, which we'll learn more intensely in a moment. Yodea tzadik nefesh behemto. A tzadik knows the soul of his animal. What did the posuk say in Mishlei? And these are interesting psukim. If I said to you, Tzadik knows the whole of Shas, you would say, well, that's impressive. If I say, Tzadik knows how to daven, that's impressive. Tzadik knows how to deal with people, That's impressive. What would you think if you came to me and said, tell me something about a tzaddik. What is a Jewish saint? What is a tzaddik? I said, you want to know about a tzaddik? Yodea nefesh behem, so he understands his animals well. What would you think? And that's what Mishle says, King Solomon, the wisest of all men, says about tzaddikim, yodea nefesh behem, they know the souls, the lives of their animals. What does that mean? I'm going to give you three different meanings on that, and we'll develop the idea. The first meaning is the mitzvahs in Mishle. Those of you who have learned a lot of Tanakh, I'm sure, have used the mitzvahs. Is there anybody who doesn't know what the mitzvahs is? You do not know what the mitzvahs is. When you're learning Tanakh, the mitzvahs David and the mitzvahs Tzion will be one of your biggest helps. If you don't use the English, if you want to learn without the English, then there are two perushim, two explanations. The one just translates the words very, very briefly, and the other gives a very simple, straightforward understanding of what it's saying, just on the easiest level. So it's one of the easiest ways into Tanakh is the Mitzvahs. And the Mitzvahs, David says, why is that so great that a tzaddik knows and his animal's life? Because then it means konui etzloi midas harachmanis. That means mercy is a part of his being. Even his animals he knows and understands. That means he's a merciful person. Reb Leib Chassman was the Mashkiach in Hebron Yeshiva many years ago. And Reb Leib Chassman says that cannot be the meaning. Because then the tzaddikim would love and know the souls of all animals. If it's all about mercy, then it would be about animals, like the environmentalists are. Love animals. It doesn't say that. It says, Yodea tzaddik nefesh behem tur, his animals. If it's his animals, then it has nothing to do with mercy. That's not the issue. This is about something else. Mercy is a great thing, but that's not what this is about. This is about something else. And Reb Leib Chassman says what this is about is another statement of Chazal that is sometimes difficult to understand, but we have it quoted many times. Very similar to what the Chazal said about this pasuk. Here we said, Ashrehem ha-tzadikim, fortunate, happy are the tzadikim, shechavivo aleihem behemtom kugufem. Who love their animals as themselves. That's what the Chazal said here. There's another Chazal that says, Tzadikim mamoinom chaviv olehem kugufon. Tzadikim love their money as they love themselves. It's another statement. Imagine what the capitalists would do if they got hold of that. The environmentalists could do well with the one Chazal, and the capitalists could do well with the other Chazal. It's interesting, you can find chazals to prove just about anything you want. If you want to prove communism is right, you can find chazals. If you want to prove that capitalism is right, you can find chazals. If you want to prove that Christianity is right, you can find chazals. If you want to prove that Islam is right, you can find chazals. And that's why we have to be so careful in the way we understand the chazal. In what context we put it in, how we understand it linked into all the other chazals. Because take any one of them out of context and you can prove whatever you want. What does Chazal mean with that? That's a famous Chazal, and it means that the tzaddikim understand the value of money in a way that nobody else does, because they understand the meaning of theft, of honesty, and they know how hard it is to earn an honest dollar. And therefore, when they've earned it, they want to keep it and protect it so they don't have to just re-earn it again and waste it and waste it. They know how much time it is. For them, it's an enormous sacrifice. For a tzaddik, as we were discussing this morning in a way, to take time off your learning to earn a living is a major sacrifice. So you want to be efficient in doing that. And therefore you protect your assets very carefully so that you should be efficient. That's what that means. And Reb Leib Chassman says, this is what this is. We're talking about your animals, not just animals in general. Tzaddikim love their animals because their animals are their businesses. Their animals generate income. Their animals generate profits. That's what they live off. And that's why their animals are very dear to them. That's why their animals are very precious to them. That's how Reb Leib Chassman learns it. And I'm going to suggest to you that we're not going to go with that explanation either. And the reason is, firstly, the Chazal here is different. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that they value their money. And secondly, it says something different to the others. It says, Ashrehem, they're lucky, they're fortunate, they're happy, which it doesn't say in the other Chazal. And the proofs it brings are not from other examples of where Chazal, where the Chachomim, where the Tzaddikim valued their money. Can you think of cases where the Tzaddikim valued their money? Yaakov going across the river to get the little odds and ends. Chazal says that you see, his money is more important to him than his life. There are cases like that where we see for Chazal, money is as important as their own lives. They value it enormously. But this Medrash doesn't bring proofs from that. The Medrash brings proofs from Yaakov sending Yosef to the flock to see the animals. So the Medrash is talking specifically about animals, not about assets in general. And the Medrash brings the Pasuk in Mishle, Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behemto. A Tzadik knows his animal's life. That's not about money, that's about something else. So I think Chazal are touching on something different here. This is not about mercy, and this is not about money. This is about something else altogether. What can it be? There's a third idea here. There's an idea that is different, both of the idea that the Mesudas brings, and the idea that the Blade custom brings. What could be the third idea? A terribly important idea, which we tend to neglect in Yiddishkeit. In our Jewish experience, we tend to neglect it. And the people who perhaps are best at not neglecting it, in fact, are the Eastern religions, the Orientals. And here's the concept. The concept is about Yodea Nefesh Behemto. Yodea means to know, to understand, to anticipate. And what Chazal are telling us here is if you have an animal, you're not responsible to know other people's animals, but if you have a responsibility, if you've taken the responsibility of an animal, whether he's your dog or your parrot or he's your flock of sheep, you have an obligation to be Yodea. What does Yodea mean? Rashi says, Ma behemto tzorich. You need to know your animal's needs. You need to be tuned into what your animal needs. Otherwise, don't own one. Now, why is that so important? Well, firstly, it's the beginning of any chesed. The first thing about kindness, and the hardest thing, is to be tuned in to what other people need. You'll find that if, for example, you have it in countless examples. I'll give you a few just off the top of my head. The one is right this minute. I'm standing in front of you, teaching something to you. The hardest thing is for me to abandon what I would like to teach you because I enjoy it and I've prepared it and I think it's fun, and say that that's not what you need right now. I'm talking to an audience that needs something else. Very hard to subjugate your desires to somebody else's needs, even when you have a responsibility. And sometimes when you're teaching, the most horrific thing of all, and it happens mostly when you're a guest lecturer, is you walk into a class or to a group and you realize it's not the group you prepared for. You know, you don't know until you see who's sitting in front of you. You don't really know. And the thing that you prepared is not what this group needs to hear. And you know how hard it is to drop it and change and say, I've got to tune into their needs. What I'm doing, this is my need. I'm not here for my need, I'm here for the student's need. What does the student need? One of the hardest things in teaching. In business, it's one of the hardest things. Sometimes you have a business idea, and you get very taken with it, and you want to do it, you want to implement it. It's just not what your customers need. It's suicidal in business to pursue your own ego, if that's not what the customer needs. It's suicidal. Can you think of a business that committed suicide doing that? Coca-Cola nearly did it. Yeah, good example. Yeah, they're absolutely right. They went off on an ego trip and the customers just about dropped them. They nearly, you're absolutely right. That's a good one. Any other examples? Apple computers? Brilliant! Ingenious! And they kept on it, still till this day. And the customers are saying, but we don't want that. It's better than Microsoft, but we don't want it. We want something else. The customers might be wrong. But in business, we're lucky, because in business, if you tune out of the customer, you get to learn it very quickly. You look at your bank account, you look at your stock price, and you learn very quickly that you've blown it. But in Torah and in life, you can go through a lifetime without realizing it. A parent can raise his children for 25 years and not realize that he was never tuned into his children's needs.
A husband and wife can live together for 50 years and never realize they were never tuned into each other's needs. One can have animals and never be tuned into their needs. It's not for nothing that our great people were trained with animals. Avraham was a shepherd. Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Shaul, David, all the leaders of Israel were shepherds first, to learn the skill of becoming tuned in to the needs of what you're leading. Not your own ego. Do what they need. Learn how to tune into their need. Yodea tzadik nefesh behemto means tuning in to your... You have a behemoth, you have an animal, you have a pet. You are responsible to anticipate and to know its needs. Now, what would you think is one of the most difficult things about knowing somebody else's needs, even an animal? The first thing is just tuning in, feeling it, because you can't work it out. This is intuitive. If you sort of sit your dog down in front of you and now go through an analysis as to what you think your dog might be needing, you're going to miss it. It's an intuitive thing. You've got to be able to read your dog. You've got to be able to respond, see, feel. And the same it is lahavdil with people. You can't sit down with your wife and try and figure out, what does she need right now? Could it be clothes? Could it be makeup? Could it be jewelry? Could it be affection? Could it be conversation? Well, yesterday I gave her this, so maybe today she needs that. And it doesn't work like that. You're either tuned in or you're tuned out. So that's the first difficulty, is tuning in. But what's the second difficulty, the more difficult thing than that? Any suggestions? Just before that, you're right, implementing is part of the problem. But once you're tuned in, it's easier to implement, because now you're aware that you're a kind person and you're aware of a need, you respond. The big problem is that even kind people don't do kindness because they're not tuned in. And then I say, but I'm a kind person, I'm such a nice person. Yes, but you weren't tuned in, so she didn't feel your kindness. Or he didn't, or they didn't feel your kindness because you just weren't tuned in. So usually if you're tuned in and you're a kind person, you will respond. What is the difficulty? Moving yourself out of the way in order to get tuned in. Now you're tuned in. Even once you're tuned in, the big problem is staying tuned in. Because the moment you've identified the other person's need, what happens? Changes. All the time it's changing. Even an animal. Animal needs water. The animal drinks. It doesn't need water anymore. Does that mean it doesn't need anything? No, now it needs something else. There's always a need, and the need is always changing. And it's the same with a customer, and it's the same with a child, and it's the same with a parent, and it's the same with a husband or wife. As you satisfy one need, another need is appearing. So the business of being your Yodea Nefesh Behemtov, to know someone else, is an ongoing investment of effort and emotion and intuition. It's ongoing. You never rest. All the time. It's a difficult skill to learn and very demanding, but that's what love is. That's what connection is. And that's your Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behemtov. And if you look in the Rashi, I left out a word in the Rashi, I'll own up to you. I did leave out a word in the Rashi, and I'm going to insert the word that I left out. On the Pasuk, Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behemto, here are Rashi's words. That means, Ma Behemto, what his animals, Rashi adds, Uvne Beiso, and his family, Tzrichim, need. Where does Rashi get the family from? Rashi's saying, it's no big thing, why would we talk about a Tzadik who knows his animals? Is that the ultimate? No. Knowing your animal is a vehicle to learning how to know your family. Start with animals. If you can get it right with animals, get on to family. Try and get it right with family. And then move on beyond that. So Rashi is expanding the idea beyond just an animal knowledge to a knowledge of others, a knowledge of those who are close to you, a knowledge of the people you are responsible for. Animals first, and then lahavdil, spouse, children, family, to be yodea nefesh behemto, to understand and to know what that nefesh is. What's all this got to do with the Yetzer Hara, you might be asking? Let's take it one step further. And say, if Rashi has expanded it to behemoth, to b'nei mishpocha, to b'nei bayis, from animals to family, let's expand it one step further. And say, what does Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behemto mean? A tzadik is in touch with his own animal needs. If you know how to be in touch with your pets and your sheep, and you know how to be in touch with your family, then comes the hardest one of all. Get in touch with yourself. Get to learn what you need. And the Ralbag touches on that and says, find it for you. Barotzen, the meaning is, nefesh behemta, what is to understand the soul of your animal? Hanefesh hachumrish shehila adam, the animal soul that resides in the human being. That's what you have to be in touch with. So that same skill of tuning into the needs of another, you need in order to tune into your own needs too. Very, very important. And that's where we'll focus for a little while. Our tendency is not to do that. And the most dangerous time of that tendency is as we're becoming serious about our Yiddishkeit, as we're becoming religious. There's a tendency to abandon that. Can you think why that is? Why do we do that? Deny our own physical needs. You overcompensate. Okay, one example is a really good point, that you want to get away from it. You've been so involved in that you want to move away. That's a good reason. What other reasons that you can think of? Yes. Yes, now you're starting to wonder. You've been told, you learn in yeshiva, you do a bit of musa and all these terrible things that your body wants, and it's all yetzahara, and what is legitimate and what isn't, and you start steering away from it. Also a good reason. Yes, sir? Right. Right, and that's for two reasons. The one is that when you're communicating, when you're talking, we tend to talk with models, we tend to talk with simple illustrations, and it's very difficult to teach somebody who hasn't got a background something that's subtle and that's grey, so we tend to teach in black and white in the hope that eventually we'll put the black and white together and the colours will start forming. But in the interim, there's a very black and white, and sometimes nefesh is, the neshama is good and the body is bad, and spiritual needs are great and physical needs should be ignored, and there's such a picture sometimes emerges. The other thing is that there is a kind of an infiltration into, well, there is a danger of an infiltration into our own thinking from other religions. We shouldn't think that just because we're in yeshiva, we're protected from the infiltration of strange ideas and philosophies. And virtually every other religion does separate the good and the evil and the bad and the body and the soul, and the body is part of this world and the soul is part of the world to come, etc., etc. With us, it's very different. Same as I said about yetzer, there's one yetzer. Not good, it's not bad. It's the creative force of a human being. Sometimes it comes out bad, sometimes it comes out good. Midas. They're midas, one midas. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. Depends what the proportions are. So it is with body and soul. And the body and soul are not as distinct as we sometimes like to think they are. In some ways they are distinct, and in other ways they are not distinct. So let's think of some examples where you see the overlap. One example where you can see the overlap is Shabbos. What are you supposed to do on Shabbos? We know what you're not supposed to do. There are a whole lot of things you're not supposed to do. But one of the things you're supposed to do is eat. And you're supposed to eat well. And eating well does not mean eating a lot. Eating well means eating things that are delicious. Things that are good. See that? We see that with brochas. Once, when I came to yeshiva, I won't tell you which yeshiva it was, the food was inedible. It was totally inedible. Sorry? It was not, we would have died for this food. The food was inedible. And when I started asking the older boys around, how long has this been going on for? They said, what? I said, the food. They said, what's wrong with it? I said, can you eat this? And they said, we didn't come here for food, we came here for our neshamas. I thought, wow, where am I? So I took a bowl of food, and I walked across the street to the Rosh Yeshiva's house, knocked on his door, and I said, I have a shaila. He said, what's the shaila? So urgent, in the middle of lunchtime. I and I want to know if you're allowed to make a brocha on this. This is what they've given at the yeshiva, and I don't know whether you're allowed to make a brocha or not. So he took it like this, and he didn't even answer me. He put on his coat, and he marched into the yeshiva, and he called some of the older boys in the dining room, and he said, "How long has this been dished up to the boys?" And I said, "Same as they said to me, we haven't come here to eat, we came here to learn." And he said, "I'm here to teach humans, not angels. If you can eat this food, you're angels and you should go and learn with someone else. This is not for human beings and this is not for brothers." And then he walked into the kitchen and he gave the cook what for. It's not what you give to B'nai Torah, that's not how they should be eating. Can't make a brocha on this food. Got to be taste. Got to be good. So you see that in all sorts of spiritual areas, there is a requirement of sensual pleasure. Without the sensual pleasure, you cannot make a brocha. You don't smell a beautiful smell, you can't make a bore mene v'somen. If you don't enjoy the taste of the food, you can't make a shihakol, even if it's healthy. You can't make a broch on it if you don't enjoy the taste of it. And Shabbos and Yom Tov, there are so many things where we see the overlap. So this clear separation of black and white isn't right. We've got to find the balance, we've got to search for the balance, but it isn't black and white. And we tend to submerge and subjugate our physical needs. As, you know, they're either negative or at best they're neutral, but they're not worthy of a whole lot of attention. And we get into a lot of trouble because of that. Because when we do that, what tells the Rolf puts it quite well, he says one of two things happen. Either you haven't successfully killed that part of yourself, in which case it will attack you unknown to you at times later in your life because you didn't satisfy it. Or you have been successful in killing it, in which case you're guilty of suicide because you've killed a part of yourself. Our physical needs are also part of our souls, and there's Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behemta. A tzadik knows, he understands, he's tuned in to his own needs, just as he's tuned in to the needs of his animal. He can tell you at any time what each animal needs. He can tell you at any time what each member of his family needs. You try this sometime. Go to people you're close, who might be your parents or they might not, and say, "Can you answer me immediately?" Go to a parent. "Can you, without thinking, tell me what each of your child's most critical need is right this minute? Not what they want. What does each child need most at this moment?" Quite frightening. Very few parents can answer that. "No, I have to speak to them, I have to check up, but I know exactly now what they need." Then you're out of touch. What does your wife need at this moment? What does your husband need? Wives are better at it than husbands. Wives sometimes know. Husbands don't. They're totally out, tuned up, have no clue. Absolutely clueless what their wives need. Absolutely clueless. You try it one day. Get the wife to write down on a piece of paper what she thinks she needs. At this moment, what do you need most? And ask the husband to write down five of the things he thinks she might have answered. Not one of the five will be right. Not one of the five. And it makes no difference if they've been married for 6 months or for 25 years. It's very seldom that the men get it right. That's serious. That's really serious. Not tuned in. And if we don't know it with our children and with our husbands and wives, with ourselves, we don't know it either. What do we really need? And that's why Ashrei, that's why the Chazal say, use that word, Ashrei Amat Tzadikim. They're fortunate, they're happy. Because you're so happy when you understand what you need, when you know what you need, and you can take care of it. But there's another reason that a tzaddik is happy. When you do this exercise, and I don't know if we'll have an opportunity to actually workshop the exercise, we can't do it in a big group like this, but actually exercise, actually learn how to do this. But if you do this exercise, and you're actually able to focus down on what you need, the biggest revelation is how much you don't need. And when I say need and don't need, I don't mean that you can survive on very little. That's not what I'm talking about. When I say once you know what you need, you will be surprised at how much you don't need. What I mean by that is that if your key needs are satisfied, you need very little else to be totally happy. It's not a question of saying, you know, if I've got a little bit to eat, and I've got a little one-room department somewhere in some slum somewhere or other, and I've got a Gemara, I can manage. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the key need, that if I've got that, not I can manage. I'm in ecstasy. I don't need anything else. That's what knowing your need means. And with each person it's different. One person it's an emotional need, another person it's a financial need, another person it's a sensual need, another person it's a kind of security, another person it's intellect and vibrance. And each one, there are certain keys that we can touch once we understand what our true needs are. Once you've accessed that, everything else blows away. You don't need the other stuff. The reason we need all sorts of things, I'm not talking only about material things. The reason we need all sorts of things is because what we really need, we don't have. So we make up with quantity. And we're pursuing, and we're running, and we're chasing to try and satisfy this emptiness. Because the real need isn't satisfied. And if we can access our real needs, what we really need, physically as well as spiritually, you'll be surprised at how little else we need. And that's another reason why Ashreihem Tzadikim, the Tzadikim are so fortunate, they're so lucky, they're so happy. They're happy because they know what they need, and in satisfying that need, they need so little to be so ecstatically happy. That's Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behemta. What does an animal need to make an animal happy? What does he need? How many of you have had dogs at home when you were there? Any of you have dogs? What does a dog need to be happy? Gesunde bones, a little bit of meat, maybe some kids playing around a little. It doesn't need very much. And his tail starts wagging and he's happy. That's all he needs. And you can get him all the fancy things. You know, you see these Meshugoyim in Los Angeles, and they buy fur coats for their animals, and they buy necklaces for their animal. Doesn't need it. All he wants is a bone. We're the same. Our Nefesh Behemta is the same. Give us what we really need and we'll be so happy we won't need anything else. And that's why one has to be careful with the learning of Musa and the practicing of Musa. You have to be careful that you don't deny, in denying all the unnecessary needs, that you don't deny the essentials, because by denying the essentials you will pursue the unnecessary no matter how much Musa you learn. And if you satisfy the essentials, you don't need the Musa. You just drop the others. They become unimportant. They become irrelevant because there's a self-satisfaction, there's a self-fulfillment. That's Yodea Nefesh, Yodea Tzadik, Nefesh Behemta. So that's the principle that I wanted to introduce you to this evening, before we go further with it in the other two sessions, to give you some sense of how we're going to go about this. And it's not a question of denial. It's a question of satisfying. It's not a question of denying what you need and want. It's giving you what you need and want, but knowing what that is. Because if you know what it really is, you'll be surprised at how simple it is, how easily one can become satisfied and fulfilled and happy in the widest of ways and in the truest of ways. Let's have some discussion and then we'll carry on to tomorrow night. Yourself and then yourself. And then. It's a good question, and there are two answers to that. The one is, you get to a point where your needs, where it's Asay Ratzon Chol Tzitzono, where your need and the Ribbono Shel'olam's need merge into one, because we have the Ribbono Shel'olam in us. You get to a point where that, and that's when you die, basically, where you have no more physical. If you went through life correctly, you would get to a point where your only need is spiritual. When you start off as a baby, your only need is physical. You have no spiritual need. And as you go through life, there's a shifting. And your physical needs become less, and they become replaced by spiritual needs as you move forward, to the point that you get to where you have no physical needs. Moshe Rabbeinu was there, and didn't die. He carried on living for a long time after that. And that's really what we're talking about. So there's a process. When I say you've got to identify your needs, for the proper time, the need might be very little physical. There will be some physical because he's still a living being. But it will be different for you and me, and we've got to accept I'm not the proper time. And if I'm going to try and act as if I am the Chofetz Chaim, I will be denying one of my needs, and that will be as serious as the Chofetz Chaim denying his needs, which might be far more spiritual, of course, than mine. But to deny, and again, we're talking about that essential need, and keep on bearing in mind that when you have identified that need, it reduces your desires, it doesn't increase them. It gives you a lot more pleasure for a lot less input. And we'll look at examples of that. So you get more pleasure, more satisfaction from much less quantity. When what you're getting is what you need rather than what you don't need. If what you don't need you'll go and you'll go and you'll go. If you know, we look at it with diet, we look at it with eating. If a person wants to control his weight using diet, it's an important principle. Learn to know what your body needs and eat what it needs. Because if you're not eating what your body needs, no amount of quantity will satisfy you until you're completely full. And that's why in the United States, for example, this is a major health problem at the moment, the quantity that people eat, because they are so vacuous, they are so empty, because their needs are not being satisfied, that they try and make it up with quantity, and they eat and eat. It doesn't help. But if you really know what your body feels like, your body might feel like a piece of cheese. And you're going to have a hamburger, you'll have 10 hamburgers and it won't satisfy you. That's not what you needed. That was, you had a little piece of cheese and you were tuned in and you knew what your body needed, and then you'd say a broker, you would enjoy the cheese, you would taste beautiful things in the cheese. We might do an exercise on that, how to eat in a way that a very small amount can give you such satisfaction that you don't need any more. And it's the same with all physical things, and that means you can reduce your need, your budgetary needs, your culinary needs, your every need can be reduced because you get so much pleasure from so little. So the pleasure is not reduced, the pleasure is increased. The quantity that gives the pleasure is reduced. That's the process. Yeah. They never do. You will never need something that the Torah doesn't allow. The Rebbe Shlomo is not a cynic, he's not a what's the word? He's not a sadist.